Good Morning Football is a production of the NFL in partnership with iHeartRadio.
Good Morning Football!
Combine week, baby! Welcome to Good Morning Football. We are presented by Ram. I'm back! In the New York City groove, Michael Robinson is here. Michael at 6:45 wants to debate Jameis Winston versus Jimmy Garoppolo. The show hasn't even started.
Yeah, right. Let's go. We're ready to go.
Three hours is not enough.
No, it's not. No, it is not.
There are no ski slopes for you within 5 minutes of this studio. We appreciate James Palmer.
I'm a little on edge.
As well, I'm Kay Adams. Excited to be back. Why am I back? Why did I decide to leave my brilliant vacation to come here? Because it's Combine Week, and the only person who loves it more than I do is that sick pup, Peter Schrager, who is there. Anyone else, there's no one. They're like, the lights aren't even on in Indianapolis at the 2022 NFL Scouting Combine. Shrag, set the scene.
Kay, I said yesterday on the show, I said, Kay says the NFL honors is her favorite night. I say Combine is my favorite week. What I didn't realize would be that there would be zero people behind me when I arrived. And that's okay, because we're setting the table right now. Today is the first real day of the Combine. Last night, everybody kind of got in, the coaches, the GMs. A lot of the players were arriving also. And today, behind me on these podiums, there's eight of them in this convention center right now. A lot of the coaches and general managers around the league are going to speak with the local media, but also the national media. Some names to look for. The Broncos guys, both George Payton, the GM, and Nathaniel Hackett will be speaking here. The Cardinals guys, both Steve Keim and Cliff Kingsbury will be speaking behind me. And then Zach Taylor, Ron Rivera, several others. Today is more of an everybody gets settled. Last night might have been a rager for some of those coaches. I was in bed by 8 p.m. because I have a show every morning. Let's go.
Shrags, will you please go out? You didn't go out after your Rams won the Super Bowl. Will you please enjoy yourself out there in Indy? Promise?
I will. I will hit it up. Yeah, Sunday night, I'll be out big. Let's go.
All right, Peter Schrager will be joining us.
Take a button down, Peter.
We've got some great interviews planned as well here. Brad Holmes, Jason Light, joining Schrags there on set when they wake up and decide to join the party. For now, it's Lee Block. Oh, Jimmy Palm Trees, like baritone. I do look good. Combine week in full swing, and as Schrags said, we have it covered at every angle, every second, every best expert breaking it down. The 2022 NFL Scouting Combine is presented by Verizon. Around-the-clock coverage right here on NFL Network, kicking off Thursday, March 3rd. We're setting the table for you as teams start to trickle in. And by the way, a lot of business gets done during these couple of days, so that's what we'll be keeping our eye on. It all kicks off at 4 p.m. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, 2 p.m. on Sunday. A lot of action during the next several days in Indy, not only on the field with drills and health and the hand checks that Joe Burrow tweeted about last year, which is my absolute favorite. But there's real players here working behind the scenes to ready their teams for the next season. So whether it's a player, a coach, a general manager, whatever, what are you guys most fascinated with when it comes to this combine?
Well, I'm going to go up there to the Northeast, Pittsburgh Steelers, right? To me, you know, Big Ben obviously is retiring. They're looking for a franchise quarterback. And my question is, what do they do at the quarterback position? They drafted Mason Rudolph. They have Dwayne Haskins there. But there's a kid in this draft that I think he's going to fall to them at 20. And it may be a little bit high draft pick for this kid at 20. But Malik Willis, quarterback out of Liberty.
Okay.
I think this kid is dynamic. I love this kid. He can make every throw on the football field. He had a great Senior Bowl week. He showed leadership. And again, he showed that the dynamic playmaking ability that he showed over the last 2 years at Liberty. Now, what was he? I think he was 8-5 for a record. Threw for over 2,800 yards, and the kid can get the ball in the end zone. I can only imagine this Pittsburgh Steelers offense with this type of a quarterback.
You're talking fits already. Okay.
I'm just saying. I think he's a fit for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they have a defense that can help a young quarterback out. I had a young quarterback in Russell Wilson his rookie year. We had a top-flight defense, and having that defense allows the play caller to be able to call certain things, to be able to, you know, necessarily to take chances on third and fourth down, knowing you have a defense that can, you know, have your back.
If so, I'm a prospect, like, get me to Pittsburgh. Give me that defense. Give me Najee Harris, and I'm set to go rookie year and beyond.
But that's if they don't make a run at Russell Wilson or Deshaun Watson or Jimmy Garoppolo, any of those veteran quarterbacks that are out there. I'm very interested with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Who wouldn't want to go to Pittsburgh? Look at that stability.
It is.
Well, there's some instability in Indianapolis, and it's not just at the combine. Yeah. It's with the Indianapolis Colts. If I could follow one person around, maybe shrink me down very small, put me in Chris Ballard's pocket, the general manager of the Indianapolis Colts, and I want to know every conversation that he has with head coach Frank Reich about their quarterback in Carson Wentz. What is the future for Carson Wentz with the Colts? I was told late last week that a decision had not been made. A lot of people, you read any pretty much journalist in Indianapolis, they're kicking Carson Wentz out of town. And I get it. Those last 2 weeks were abysmal. And he was a big reason why they didn't make
terrible
the playoffs. But you have to evaluate where you are, because both of these men put their neck on the line for Carson Wentz. They gave up a first-round pick, a third-round pick. We saw what Jim Irsay had to say at the end of the season. Do they stick with Carson Wentz, or do they move on? You move on, I don't know who your quarterback is. This is a really telling situation, because this is the line, Mike Robb, that Carson Wentz has tried to toe his whole career. Mm. How aggressive do I be making plays, and how do I play within the system? A lot of first halves and opening drives, I covered the Colts a number of times. Really a lot of success. Mm-hmm. A lot of that's scripted by Frank Reich, saying, make sure you do this, you look here first, make sure you play within my offense. Chris Ballard made a lot of points at the end of their season at that postseason press conference where he said, you have to take what's given there, you have to take the layups.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do what is the easy throw in Frank Reich's system. Now, do they think, Kay, he made some of those adjustments?
Right.
Led the NFL in interceptions a season ago, threw 27 touchdowns and 7 picks last year, third fewest in the NFL. So there was some change. Can you find him to make another step?
James.
I don't know.
The change that they found, or the change that Frank Reich figured out, was, you know what? Don't put the ball in Carson Wentz's hands late in the game. Let's not have him throw the ball over 35 times. Let's manage him from the sideline. And yeah, he's a great quarterback when you can manage him from the sideline. But when you were a top 2 overall pick, when you were, you know, in the MVP running early in your career, when everybody thought that you literally took a team to the Super Bowl. Now, you know, Nick Foles actually won it. But everybody thought you took a team to the Super Bowl. You were brought into Indy to be the difference.
Exactly.
I don't think Carson Wentz was the difference. Actually, I think they won despite Carson Wentz in some areas last year.
But that's the debate that I'd like to hear the two of them have, Kay. Like, what are your options then if you move on from Carson Wentz? Now you don't have any quarterback.
You want to Ant-Man yourself.
Yes.
Rick Moranis, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids yourself.
Very much so.
And put yourself in the pocket of a Ballard.
As long as I get back to normal size.
I like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Me swimming in the big Cheerios. Yeah. It looks so fun and psycho creepy.
Watched it recently with the boy. It was fantastic.
Can I see that binder, please? That binder is so aggressive. The NFL media, and thank God for our research.
I love it.
Staff.
I have to have it.
Can you lift it so everyone can see? It is. It's a phone book. Yes. You got to use both hands to do that. It is huge. There's so many storylines, so many players, so much excitement. And I'm not fascinated as much as I am with current players in the league, like you guys are talking about. You're mentioning Wentz. You two are talking Jimmy. I walk in here from vacation. Hello. There are deep talks about Jimmy Garoppolo and his future. And everyone's going to be talking about that. And that's what I'm fascinated by. And no, the Niners don't pick. They don't pick for a while, guys. When do they pick? They pick second round, 61st overall. But they're going to have all eyes on them, I think, all week long because of Jimmy G and this foregone conclusion that at some point they're going to go ahead and deal him. Now, we're hearing reports that John Lynch is going to, you know, meet with multiple teams to sort of talk what can we get for him, who's a good fit, and are they in a holding pattern? The bigger thing is, I can't believe I'm coming back from a vacation and we don't know what's going on with Aaron Rodgers. I almost boycotted coming back. I'm not coming back until we figure this out. How much of a holding pattern are the Niners in until Rodgers decides? Go ahead. What are you going
to
do?
Just something, and James, I want you to repeat what we were talking about before the show, because you said something about that if the 49ers just sit there, Jimmy Garoppolo's trade value may skyrocket just by them just holding on to him and other things happening.
We see the Niners make moves all the time, big moves. But what if they just sat there and Aaron Rodgers stayed and Russell Wilson stayed and Deshaun Watson's legal situation is not cleared up and all of these other dominoes that teams are looking to see if they can land a quarterback don't happen? Now Jimmy Garoppolo is essentially the best option for a variety of teams, and we'll get at this in depth later, Peter, about all those different teams that are in win now mode. You look at the Bucks, the Saints, the Steelers. There are teams that would be interested in Jimmy Garoppolo, Peter.
Okay, Peter.
Yeah, and I think, you know, to jump in on the 49ers conversation, and James make a great point, they can't keep Jimmy Garoppolo financially. He's going to be making $25 million. They have to get extensions for Deebo Samuel. They need to get extensions for Nick Bosa. There are bigger names that they need to get taken care of, and they have Trey Lance waiting. So it's time to rip the Band-Aid off, and a lot of those conversations are going on here. I'm looking at two other teams, though, while we're here. And, you know, Joe was the name in February with Joe Burrow. I think Joe is going to be the name in March and April. And it's Joe Shane, the Giants GM, and it's Joe Douglas, the Jets GM. You look at these two men, it's time. And both of these franchises have top 10 picks. Not one, but two. The Jets have the 4th and the 10th overall. The Giants have the 5th and the 7th. New York is really, really hurting for a relevant sports team right now. You go around and it's the, you know, the Knicks are struggling. And of course, the Islanders aren't what they've been. This is going to be the topic come March and April until the Mets and Yankees actually get on the field. And I look one step further here. The Jets, their first draft under Joe Douglas was abysmal. There's very few players from that draft, including Mekhi Becton, who are even making an impact. But last year's draft class was great. Joe Shane comes from Buffalo. We don't know what his draft class is going to be. We don't know what his draft strategy is going to be. But we do know that this is a do-or-die year for Daniel Jones. The last point, a bit of breaking news. Spoke of Robert Saleh. He will not be attending the Combine at all. He was planned to speak here. He's actually not going to be coming. He says, we're too far behind on some other things. I'm going to be handling that back here. Joe Douglas and the scouting staff, they will be at the Combine. But Brian Daboll and Joe Shane, they are both expected to be here, both expected to speak today, Tuesday, at the Combine. And I'm sure there'll be plenty of questions of what their strategies are going to be. But Jets and Giants, it's about time to be relevant. And hopefully it's not just in March and April. Maybe we're talking about them come, I don't know, December or January this time.
It's a great point. You know, I was going to mention that Kyle Shanahan also opting to not go. And I wonder how much of that is not wanting, you know, we know he hates answering questions about Jimmy G and their future, and how much I know that they're not picking to the second round, that plays into that. You know, let John Lynch handle and face the music. I don't want to be asked about Jimmy G and his future Peter Schrager. You have Brett Holmes joining you. They're trying to make Detroit a contender in the NFC North. We're all trying to see if Aaron Rodgers is staying or going, but they want to compete. You'll talk to him. Jason Light joining you as well there in Indianapolis.
See you, Peter.
Yeah, Schrags, I missed your first five for your combine prospects. I cannot wait to hear those and get your last, your top five combine guys to keep an eye out for. You reveal them next right here on Good Morning Football.
Okay, he's talking about Kyle Hamilton, that safety, Notre Dame. Yeah. Notre Dame safety.
Just give you an early taste of some of my top 10 prospects. Joe Burrow lit it up this year. 60 touchdown passes in college football, unheard of numbers.
He runs a quarterback draw. 5 touchdowns.
Well, how about maybe the best pass rusher to enter the NFL draft in quite some time? Chase Young.
Ball is out. A fumble picked up by Chase Young. Touchdown, Chase Young.
Ja'Marr Chase, to me, is the best non-quarterback in this draft.
72 yards, Burrow to Chase, and numero uno.
I've got Kyler Murray as the number one prospect in this entire draft.
Murray dives to the end zone, and he's in for the touchdown. Kyler Murray.
Jalen Waddle.
Throws it, end zone, touchdown. Waddle, what a great play action fake and a touchdown.
Those were some previous years. We do this every year as a show. If we go back to 2016. I like to give 10 names before we dig in to the medicals, before we dig in to the mock drafts, and before we get to know these guys inside and out. Yesterday, I revealed 10 through 6 on the show with some names you haven't been hearing elsewhere. Here is my list from 10 to 6. Jordan Davis, the big 340-pound defensive tackle out of Georgia. David Ojabo, the other player, other than Aiden Hutchinson, out of Michigan on that defensive line. My number one wide receiver is a guy that I don't see anywhere in top 10s on mock drafts. Treylon Burks, out of Arkansas. Kyle Hamilton, the stud safety. And then Kayvon Thibodeau. Let's go to number five on the list. Let's go back to Athens. I'm going with Trayvon Walker, defensive end out of Georgia. An absolute beast. This guy, 6'5", 275 pounds, does it all. Started all 15 games last year for Georgia. Had a career-high 6 sacks, had 7.5 tackles for a loss. Again, one of these players that you're not seeing in the top 10 in many mock drafts. I'm telling you, this is the one who is going to blow up the combine. And out of this thing, everyone's going to be like, how do you pass on Trayvon Walker? He's such an athletic freak. Has been training at Exos, which is one of the top training facilities, has been blowing it out of the water there. They're expecting him to be the workout warrior at the combine. But then you add that in with the fact that he's a national champion and he's a leader on that defensive line. Trayvon Walker, very high on him. And yet I'm not as high on Trayvon Walker as I am his teammate, number four on my list, N'Kobe Dean, the linebacker out of Georgia. Yes, another Georgia defensive player. I have three of them in my top 10 players on my list this year. And N'Kobe Dean, I watch this player. I see another Georgia linebacker. I see Roquan Smith. And he might end up being even better. Now look, physically, he's not Darius Leonard. He doesn't come in with a giant wingspan. He doesn't run sideline to sideline like that. He might not be Fred Warner. But as far as leadership goes, as far as being Johnny on the spot, and as far as being a difference maker, I could see N'Kobe Dean being not only a 10-year starter, I could see this guy being an all-pro in the NFL. Great linebacker, was the leader of this defense, a national championship defense that is just loaded with stars. Number three on my list, let's get to the big name that everyone's been talking about since really the start of the college football season. It's Aiden Hutchinson out of Michigan. Where's number 97? Was the superstar of December when the Michigan Wolverines not only beat Ohio State, but then won the Big Ten championship game and then went on to win and go and play in the National College Football Playoff. Aiden Hutchinson, the number 6'6", 265 pounds, senior, two-time captain, finished second in the Heisman as a defensive lineman. He was MVP of the Big Ten championship game in a game where they won 42-3. He was all over the field. This is the player that everyone says day one makes an impact, makes a difference. Again, is he Nick or Joey Bosa? Maybe not. It's a different type of player. He is a building block player, a franchise cornerstone, and someone that everyone says, hands down, top three pick. So why isn't he in the top two? Because I'm going offensive line for my top two picks of the 2022 Combine. Number two, let's head down to NC State and let's go with Ike Ekwonu, who is an absolute freak of nature. 6'4", 320 pounds, and one of the greatest kids you'll meet. He had 31 starts over three seasons. He's a first-team All-American, and he is an eraser. This is a guy who had just three sacks allowed in 476 passing plays last year. According to NC State, this is a player who also had 67 pancake blocks last season. Not his career, in a season, 67. Again, 6'4", 320 pounds, an absolute athlete, but also comes from an amazing family. His father was a basketball star out of Nigeria. He himself was a three-sport athlete. His twin brother, he plays for Notre Dame. Like, this is an incredible family, an incredible player, a day one starter who is flawless. And yet my number one prospect, I'm going back down to Bama, and I'm going to Evan Neal, offensive tackle for the Crimson Tide. I think he's going to be the first player overall. I think he's going to be blocking for Trevor Lawrence, and I think he's the top player in this combine. He's 350 pounds, that's fine. He's also 6'7", and he's got 41 career starts at Alabama. So he was blocking last year for Bryce Young, of course, but he also was with Mac Jones, and of course he was there when there was different quarterbacks, Tua, Hurts, all those guys. Two sacks allowed in 626 pass blocking attempts. Bryce Young last year had three touchdowns and a rushing touchdown in the bowl game, in the SEC championship game against Georgia, and it was this guy who was the biggest star, Evan Neal. I talked to a lot of GMs, talked to a lot of personnel guys. They said they'd be shocked if it's not Neal one. And if it is Ekwonu or if it is Aiden Hutchinson, great. It's that kind of draft this year. There's no quarterbacks in my top 10. There are no running backs in my top 10. There's one wide receiver in my top 10. This is all about the big boys this year, guys. It's right down from a defensive tackle to several edge guys to a linebacker, and then right up top, the two tackles. I love this kind of draft. It's a crapshoot. There are several players on this list who will not go top 10. That's just how it goes. This is mine. This is how it goes going into the combine. A lot can change. Michael Robinson, you watch a lot of college football. You know these draft prospects very well. What do you think of this list? And I don't know, that certain position under center just completely missing this year at this draft.
Yeah, Peter, great job, brother. I really agree with a lot of these, man. Great job. I love Evan Neal. I mean, this guy probably is the most complete tackle in this draft. This kid can go to any team and instantly make that team better. I like his size and measurables. 350, 6'7".
6'7"?
6'7", K. He scares people walking off the bus. When he extends his arms and you have to have a pass rusher run around this mountain of a man. I mean, even if he barely touches you, you won't sack the quarterback.
Got it.
I mean, and then his position versatility. He's played right tackle. He's played guard. He can play all up and down the offensive line. Look at this kid, man. I mean, and then on tape, you see him great in combination blocks. You see him getting up to the second level. So, I mean, Peter, dude, like, bravo, man. Like, excellent job with this list. I know James got another position you missed on this list.
No, it's not really missed, and I'll agree with all of the ones that Peter hits on in a year. What I want to talk about is this is all about protecting the quarterback and getting after the quarterback. That's really the entire thing of this top 10, right, Peter? It is. Those are the two things we're looking at. Okay. But Dean jumps out at me, too, because we talked about Kyle Hamilton yesterday. We're talking about guys that can make plays as be playmakers on the defensive side of the ball. What do we see in all those highlights when he was up there was getting after the quarterback. He blitzes really, really well for a linebacker. Mm-hmm. And I think that is an aspect that we're seeing now. Kyle Hamilton does the same thing as a safety, blitzes really well. If you can do different things, Kay, when you play that middle of the field spot and matching up to these chess pieces that are big tight ends and running backs out of the backfield, they become valuable pieces on the defensive side of the ball. But again, Like M-Rob said, there's no quarterbacks, there's no corners on this list either. There's no corners on this list, Peter.
You guys do this thing where everyone's like, that's so great. Peter's like, I love this kind of draft where it's like the big boys and the... I'm not like that, Peter. I love you.
Why?
I love you. Because I have 7 defensive players, okay, 2 offensive linemen, 1 offensive skill position, no quarterbacks on this list. It's just not the kind of top 10 list I'm accustomed
to
in my time.
The rules help offensive guys.
Sure, great.
So now teams are going after the defenders to affect the quarterback. I think positionless football is coming more
smaller,
to fruition
faster.
Where guys just can play any position.
Schrager, here's my question.
Yes, sir.
Schrager, here's my question. Yeah. Even though there aren't any quarterbacks on this top 10 list, if there's one thing that you, my friend, have taught me, is that things change when these measurables come and these pro days come and these things happen and talk happens. Patrick Mahomes wasn't on anybody's radar as a top 10 pick until well into the process. Is that possible here, or is this what it's going to shake out to be come April?
Yeah, and Kay, that's a great point. I think what happens is free agency, that wave happens, and then there's going to be some teams on the carousel that still don't have a quarterback. And it might be Carolina, it might be Denver, and then you're starting to say, well, look, Kenny Pickett might not be the 8th best player in this draft, but we need a quarterback, and all of our jobs are on the line at some point if we don't have a quarterback, and that's when that pressure comes. But they could go and wow this thing. And Kay, to your point about the wide receivers and the corners, it's actually a great thing because there are 25 wide receivers in this draft that I've been told that can go in the first 4 rounds. The issue is so many of these guys bring different things to the table and there's such depth that maybe they don't go in the top 10 and you get them in the 2nd round or the 3rd round and they still make an impact like we've seen Deebo Samuel in the 2nd round or Cooper Kupp in the 3rd round because the depth at that position is so good. One name at corner who is an egregious omission by me and I don't have him. I don't have a spot. You can't have them all. Sauce Gardner is his name. He is a tall, rangy corner out of Cincinnati. Everyone loves him and his nickname is Sauce. So trust me, as someone who loves Sauce, I am going to be in on Sauce Gardner as well. He just did not make my top 10. He's on a lot of them.
Yes.
He could go as high as number 3 or number 4 overall, but it's an awesome, awesome draft class. Very deep. You just don't have those big quarterbacks and wide receivers up at the very top.
Right now, it's time for the lead block.
Lead block.
That is Kermit meets, I don't even know. What was that?
I'm not entirely sure.
Where are you pulling that from in your gut?
Diaphragm.
All right.
There you go.
Wouldn't be a combine week with all of the little drums behind the scenes. Shrags just said it. Yesterday, during the show, Kyler Murray's agent Eric Burkhart released a lengthy statement outlining a few things here. Kyler absolutely wants to be the Cardinals quarterback for the future. He desperately wants to win a Super Bowl, and he wants a long-term contract extension. So Tom Pelissero pointed this out yesterday. The ball in the Cardinals' court. General Manager Steve Keim scheduled to speak, by the way, to the media today in Indianapolis at 3 p.m. Eastern, just a little while after Cliff Kingsbury takes the podium at 1:45 p.m. NFL Now is going to be all over that right here on NFL Network. So hopefully we'll learn more before the end of the day. I'm very excited to hear from those two. Very curious. But how do you guys think the Cardinals should handle this Kyler Murray situation? Trey, we'll actually throw it back out to you.
Yeah, and Kay, I know you just got done being out for the SAG Awards and do a lot of the celebrity stuff, mm-hmm. and there's always paparazzi, and there's TMZ, and there's people, and everyone's wanting to do the gossip. There's paparazzi here in Indianapolis as well. I want to throw up a tweet that I woke up to this morning. I did not think this was going to be revealed, but let's show one of the tweets that was made here, if we can. Guys, I made it. Dumois, I made it. Okay, Anon, please. I made it, though. Here
Sports
I am.
Dumois.
It was seen, and this is it. I was out there, guys, and the truth of the matter
Spill
is
the beans,
we didn't
Peter.
Go into great depth, but I did see Cliff. We did chat briefly. Yesterday was a whirlwind, and Cliff is almost in the middle of this thing because you've got his franchise quarterback who he came to the pros to be with in Kyler Murray, and then you've got general manager Steve Keim and Michael Bidwell, who he's on great terms with as well. What this is between Kyler's camp and the Cardinals at this moment, and really Kyler's camp wants to be paid now. They want it on March 1st. Give me my money. Let's go. And when Eric Burkhart put out that statement yesterday, that was an open salvo to everyone listening saying, pay my guy. The problem is the Cardinals are not going to necessarily do this on Kyler Murray's timeline. Because guess what? Patrick Mahomes didn't get his deal until July of this same season for Kyler. Josh Allen didn't get his to even later. Wentz and Goff to even later than that. Heck, Lamar Jackson, who was an MVP and was drafted a year before Kyler Murray, still hasn't gotten his deal. So for all the public statements that Eric Burkhart wants to make, for all of the Instagram posts and different font sizes they want to do, it's not exactly going to just make it happen. The question is Kyler willing to go the next step? Is he willing to sit out camp? Is he willing to take off the year until he gets paid? Is he willing to demand a trade? Because it doesn't necessarily happen on the player's terms. And I'll go one step further. Michael Bidwell, this would be the biggest contract he's ever given to anybody. I mean, this is Carson Palmer came there on a contract that wasn't one of these mega deals. It was after the Raiders experience, and they said, let's give Carson Palmer a ride. Kurt Warner, he was in no man's land in New York. They brought in Kurt Warner. He was backing up Matt Leinart, if you remember. So this isn't something that the Cardinals are accustomed to doing, especially ahead of schedule. I think it's going to be a fascinating press conference today at 3 p.m. with Steve Keim. But Kingsbury's place in this is kind of one of these deals where he's like, he wants to see his guy get paid. He wants to work with Kyler, but he also understands the team situation where it might not happen on Kyler's schedule. Hopefully, the cooler heads can prevail and that there won't be animosity that comes out of this entire situation. Because don't make any mistake about it. That post going out yesterday morning was orchestrated and was real and was a message to the Cardinals from Kyler's camp. Whether the Cardinals respond and say, oh, yes, please, of course, we'll do it, whatever you want, or they just laugh and are saying, hey, we'll take our time, is really what the next step is going to be here.
What do you think, Emma?
Yeah, I don't understand Kyler right now. I really don't. I don't. And if I'm the Arizona Cardinals, I stall him out. Stall him out, Debo. Wait him out. Wait and see if he's really going to sit out. Because I don't believe the kid is. I really don't. I think, to Peter's point, I think the tweet was orchestrated. I think it was on purpose because they knew that the beginning of the combine, you know, all of the brass of the Arizona Cardinals are going to be asked all the questions about it. But how I don't understand why Kyler Murray thinks that the team doesn't want him or isn't all in on him. They drafted him, James, to your point, he drafted him one overall. Cliff Kingsbury was brought there to coach him.
He wanted to coach him. He made that
clear. Wanted to coach Kyler Murray individually and specifically. They brought in a guy who had a losing record in college as a head coach. They fired the previous head coach who was only there for 1 year and also drafted a quarterback in his only year there.
Correct.
So you can't say the team isn't all in on you. So why the rush, Kyler? Why the rush? Well, Kay, James, I think I know why they want him, why he wants to rush this deal.
Uh-oh.
He wants to rush the deal because I think Kyler knows he has some inequities in terms of leadership. I think he knows that the longer he waits for this deal, the more that it's going to be revealed that maybe he isn't the leader that we all thought that he was, or maybe he isn't the face of the Arizona Cardinals that we all thought he was, or maybe he doesn't love football as much as we all thought he was previous to being the number one overall pick. That's why he wants to get his money before all that narrative starts to come out. To me, it's clearly simple what Kyler Murray and his camp is trying to do. They're trying to get paid before the truth comes out about Kyler Murray. And I hope I'm wrong.
But you think they shouldn't pay him right now? What should
I wouldn't pay him right now. What has he shown you?
But stall him. Stall to the point of what, though?
Stall him out until you feel like that you've seen enough of him that he can be your franchise quarterback. Because, frankly, right now, I haven't seen enough of Kyler Murray that I can deem him worth $40 million per season to be the face of my franchise. I've seen Colt McCoy win games. You can win with Colt McCoy in this league. He's their backup.
And so Rob just brought up Colt McCoy.
I'm just saying. Stall him out, Debo. Stall him out. You want to call bluffs and all? I mean, you want to, you know, put us on, you know, on the hot seat and stuff like that, Kyler? I'm going to stall you out. I'm going to see if you're really going to hold out. Let's go.
I'm curious, M-Rob, what part of baseball plays into this? Mm. Does Kyler think he has more leverage than other players? Because he's a top 10 pick in the Major League Baseball draft. That he can maybe tell the Cardinals, I may jump ship. I'm just curious how that plays into it. That's one aspect of this. We're talking about how the Cardinals should respond to this. I want them to respond with a lengthy statement. I want a Willy Wonka contract size statement.
With a
like
logo.
He duped those children into knocking them off one by one through his chocolate factory. I want 15 paragraphs. I want them to quadruple it. No, I'm just, listen, I think it's interesting when we have now had time, because the statement came out when we were on the air yesterday to look at it. And some of the aspects jump out at me. And M-Rob saying, is he worth $40 million a year like these other quarterbacks? In the statement, it says he would like to be paid according to equal comps. I don't think his play on the field is a $40 million quarterback. Is he Patrick Mahomes?
He's not.
Is he Josh Allen?
No.
Is he Aaron Rodgers?
He's not.
He should be self-aware enough with a play like that that he is not in that category. So I'm curious, because we don't know this, they said that they have made an offer to the Cardinals. What is that number? And what is that offer?
You mean him and his reps came and said this is what we'd like to get paid?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the number is, but in the statement it says that they have come with a proposal. And then the other part of it that says he has been obviously improving each and every year. I know these are just stats, but they're essentially identical all three seasons.
All three?
20 touchdowns to 12 picks, 26 touchdowns to 12 picks, 24 touchdowns to 10 picks.
Yeah.
The yards are almost identical. Yes, wins have gone up. And I know that's kind of a knock at Kyler, and I don't want to say it in that sense, because he is a very good player. I've talked to people in that building that say what he can do on a football field, his accuracy, his playmaking ability, off the charts, they are wowed by his ability.
But James, being quarterback is not just that.
Exactly. So that's where the communication breakdown apparently is, or probably is, because there are other aspects of playing the quarterback position that has been reported on this network multiple times by multiple people, and I've heard a lot of the same things. The other aspects of playing quarterback are those up to par with getting paid what those other guys do with every aspect of playing the quarterback position. That's the interesting aspect.
Yeah, if they're winning. What do you mean? If the talent Kyler has, you guys can say all you want about leadership, dedication of the game. If he goes to the NFC Championship, he's getting that money.
What word did you say before NFC Championship? If.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying.
He ain't got there yet.
I understand. He has to show, in my opinion, he has to show a little self-awareness here. Because I'm just trying to dispel, like, we're like, leader, you're not a leader. So if he shows that he's a leader and they're still losing the way that they're losing and he looks like he did, you know, he left a bad taste in everybody's mouth at the end of the season. He's not coming off an AFC or a great AFC playoff game up against the Chiefs like Josh Allen did. He's not coming off. I mean, that contract for Patrick Mahomes came off a Super Bowl win. That
MVP,
was
a Super Bowl MVP, and a Super Bowl.
And he's done none of those. So just a little self-awareness. I want to, you know, which I didn't see. I'm reading this statement. I want to hear that he understands he has a lot more to work on. Personally, I didn't see that in that statement. I want to see, I'm committed. I know I can be the best player in this National Football League and on this team. I didn't see that. So I love his game. I think he's got a just as high, if not higher ceiling than all the quarterbacks we've mentioned in this discussion. But he has to show a little self-awareness. There's plenty of work to be done and plenty to prove for Kyler. I want to see that part of this. But if I get that part from him, I do think they should do a deal with him.
Yeah, absolutely. If you get that part, absolutely. I think if we got that part from Kyler, we wouldn't be having this discussion. We'd all be on here fighting, hey, Arizona, y'all need to pay this dude. He's done this. He's done this. He's elevating his team this. And then in big situations, he's done this. The biggest game of their year had to be, what, the playoff game, right?
Usually
he was 19 for 34 for 137 yards, two interceptions. To me, that's indicative of Kyler Murray.
Mm-hmm.
That's also indicative of Cliff Kingsbury, the two guys that seem to be a package deal that they brought in together. To me, some of the blame goes to both of them.
This gentleman right here is the general manager of the Detroit Lions. He's entering his second offseason with that title, Mr. Brad Holmes. Welcome to Good Morning Football.
Thanks for having me.
Love
Good
having you here.
Good to be back here in Indy, man.
Isn't it? You had a combine last year, but it wasn't a combine. It was more of a, let's meet these players on FaceTime, let's meet these guys and watch the tape. What's the difference of being here in person your first year as a GM to do the combine and actually have your feet on the ground?
It feels great. You know, it was a little bit of nostalgia coming back and, you know, making that drive down and being boots on the ground here in Indy. And you see the prospects, you know, walking around. And it's like, man, we really did miss this, that we didn't have this last year. And then, you know, our staff being able to really communicate with the players and get the workout started. But it's good to be back here.
You guys won three of your last five games. There's a lot of positivity coming out of Detroit. You've got the number two pick, the number 32 pick as the Rams pick, and then the number 34 pick. As you approach the combine, where are you guys as far as the draft goes? And is this where things start happening, or are you guys already done a lot of the work?
Yeah, well, we're in a much better place now than we were, you know, let's say at this point a year ago. But I will say it's very, very exciting. Now, I will say there's a lot of smoke around right now.
Yeah.
Like, it's still, like, we gained a little bit of clarity with the Senior Bowl. Hopefully we're not selected to coach the Senior Bowl again.
No, back
but,
there.
You know, but like you said, the season ended off on a good note. Winning three games is not good enough still. You know, we want to be better. But we got some clarity at the Senior Bowl. We'll get more clarity, more questions answered this week here at the Combine. And, you know, as the process goes along, you know, that smoke starts to clear out a little more. But you got to just tackle each phase of the process and get clarity.
There's obviously needs on the roster. As you get into this, you look at this draft class, quarterback may not necessarily be the thing, running back, but offensive line, edge guys, defensive players, you look at the Detroit Lions' needs, that kind of hits a lot of boxes. Is this a good draft for the Lions to have the number two pick?
Oh, I think it's a great draft in general just because of all the draft capital that we have, just like you mentioned with the three picks in the top 50. But, you know, Peter, we have a lot of work to do. We have a lot of work that is still left, and you know that's what Dan and I believe for. That's what we know. We have a good plan in place, but you know, having the second pick, having the 32nd pick, you know, we have areas of we have question marks.
Yeah.
A lot over our roster, so there's a lot of different areas that we can go, a lot of different directions we can go. But we're excited to have the second overall pick and two picks in the first round, and we're gonna make the most of them.
It's awesome. And in addition to the draft, free agency is right around the corner. What would be your pitch as the general manager of the Detroit Lions to a free agent looking for a new place to play? And okay, the Lions haven't won many games the last few years, but what does the Detroit Lions franchise offer a free agent who's deciding between maybe Detroit and another destination?
Well, look, Dan and I had a plan in place from the get-go, and you know, we took some lumps early on, but as you said, you know, you start to see that plan really come clear at the end part of the season. And what we can definitely offer is an outstanding culture. We have a culture of collaboration, communication. We're all about grit. We have a multi-year plan in place, and we just have an outstanding head coach. You know, Dan is special. We got great leadership from the top, and you know, I tell everybody, you know, look, if you want to be a part of this, you know, hey, good luck, because it's going to be a fun ride.
Yeah.
We're going to get this thing going.
Yeah, and there's an opportunity, right? I mean,
absolutely.
That's what I look at it as. You guys had so many undrafted players and young rookies making impact plays in December. You got to think, if you're a young free agent entering your second contract, Detroit's a good place to get that chance.
Absolutely. You know, Dan and I talked about it a lot last year about, you know, when we brought guys in and we're like, well, if you want an opportunity to play, you know, we're going to give anybody any opportunity to play. I don't care where you're coming from. I don't care where you're drafted at, you know, how much money you're making, you know, undrafted free agents. And those guys and our coaches, you know, they have a passion to develop. And, you know, they're true teachers. It's a phenomenal staff. And it's just a great place to play. So we're going to have this build going, and it's only going to get better and better.
All right, let's talk about you for a moment and Dan Campbell, because you get the job last year, and the Lions interview a ton of candidates, and there's guys that we knew, the names that were batted around, whether it be Robert Saleh or Arthur Smith, whoever it is. You hired Dan Campbell, who didn't have any other interviews, mm-hmm. and who, I'm not mistaken, you didn't have a prior relationship with. How has that come together? And now, I guess 12 months removed, maybe 13 months removed, where are you and Dan Campbell at, from going to not knowing each other to now building the Detroit Lions back up from the ashes?
You know, Dan is special. He's special as a head coach. He's special as a human being. He has elite traits. Just what I think about Dan Campbell is he has amazing insight and he has amazing foresight. And, you know, he has these leadership abilities that people just believe in. He's one of those guys that just makes anybody just feel better about themselves. And but we're so like-minded. We're cut from the same cloth. We see things a lot alike from a football perspective, from a life perspective. We're friends first. You know, that's my brother. And we have a great working relationship on top of that. So it makes the work easy. But, you know, we have a plan. We're aligned in our plan. And we've just been sticking to it. So we're right on place where we're supposed to be at. And the future's looking bright right now.
Now, prior to your time in Detroit, you spent many years with the Los Angeles Rams organization. Where were you during Super Bowl, and what kind of emotions running after you seeing several of the players that not only that you scouted, but I know banged on the table for to be drafted, hoisting Lombardi trophies and getting those rings? How does that feel for you, knowing that you were the voice in the room, maybe advocating for some of those players?
Yeah, well, you know, I was at home watching it with my family, and you know, it was inspiring. It was inspiring to see because knowing all those guys, knowing the leadership, I have so much respect and admiration for Les Snead and Sean McVay and Kevin and Tony, and they have great leadership in place, and their success is not a surprise. But you know, sending like a bunch of congratulatory texts to all the guys back there saying, I'm so happy for you guys. And to get the responses of saying, hey, look, man, you were part of this.
Yeah.
You know, you were part of this. And, you know, they didn't have to say that, but that was really cool for them to say. And, you know, it makes you feel good. But it was inspiring because, you know, being a part of that build and being a part of that process inspires us to go out and do it ourselves.
I love seeing it. And I think Lions fans at home are excited to see, hey, this is someone who helped build that Los Angeles Rams franchise. And now we've got him running ours. Our last question, and I like to do this with the GMs, as we head towards the draft and as we head towards free agency, your message to the Lions fans about what they should be expecting and why they should be optimistic about the future of this franchise?
Well, you definitely should be optimistic because, you know, whoever we end up acquiring or selected, whether free agency or through the draft, man, it's going to be someone that the city is going to be proud of. It's going to be someone that the fan base is going to be proud of. Again, what our culture is about collaboration, communication, grit, perseverance, and that's really the city of Detroit, and that's what our fan base is all about. So whoever we acquire, they'll definitely be fan. They'll definitely be proud of, and we want to do it for the fans.
And you Michigan fans, calm down. Let him make his decision, okay? We understand number 97 is a good player. Let him make his decision. Let them do the process, and then we can discuss it before we get into this whole Go Blue thing.
Who's 97?
I don't know. I don't know. We're not allowed to talk about that yet. Brad Holmes, thank you so much for joining Good Morning Football. It's a pleasure. This is awesome.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome back to Good Morning Football here live in Indianapolis. The man you see right here has been a friend of our program for 5 years. When you guys were on Hard Knocks that summer, we started having Jason Light on. And in that time, not only have the Buccaneers gone to the playoffs multiple times, they've also won a Super Bowl. And now it all comes full circle. We're back at the Combine. Jason Light, great to see you on Good Morning Football.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
This is it. It's going to just be you and me. It's going to be a conversation. The guys are back in studio. They love you. They all send their regards. But all eyes are on, obviously, number 12, who announced his retirement less than a month ago. We think the retirement. I don't know. We'll see. Where are we at in Tampa Bay right now as far as the quarterback position goes and bidding farewell to Mr. Brady?
Wow. Tom is a special player, special person. We've had a great 2 years here. Right now, we're, you know, trying to make our plans to move forward, if that's the case that we need to move forward on. And, you know, there's a lot of things that we still have to give. There's a lot of time here, well, a couple weeks before free agency starts. You got the draft, you got post-draft. We've added players after the draft in the past, some significant impact players after the draft and after free agency. So we're still in that process right now.
Yeah, I go back 2 years. So let's go back February 2020. The Combine's going on. The Buccaneers, Jameis Winston was a free agent. Teddy Bridgewater was a name. Tom Brady was looming. And you go in, and then by March, all of a sudden, Tom Brady's a Buccaneer. Did you know at the Combine 2 years ago, at this stage, that Brady was even a possibility? Were those conversations happening? Now that it's over, can we go back and open the book and be like, when did that all really start going down?
No, you know, it was in our plans. We had to have door number one, door number two, door number three, all those different things kind of converging at once, and it came to a head when free agency started. So at this point that year, we had no idea. It was in the same, really knew about as much as you did.
Yeah.
And so it came to a head as soon as free agency started, and man, what a day that was.
And what's this franchise like now with Brady now on the way out to then before he got here? What kind of impact did he leave on not only the players, but the organization as a whole?
Well, tremendous. When we signed him, we talked about that, how the impact that he was going to have, me having firsthand experience being in New England with him for 7 years, what he's done for them and what he's done for us is just that. It's built a winning culture, along with our coaching staff and BA, of course, but built a winning culture, set the standard very high, and now everyone knows what the standard is, and everyone works a lot harder at reaching that standard.
Yeah, and you look at the veterans in that building, whether it's Lavonte David or Mike Evans, and you almost feel like now that they've got that Super Bowl, there's almost a different air to those guys, not only in the building, but around the league.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely a different feel in our building. And it started, I would say, you know, even pre-Brady when Bruce came on board, and then Brady, and then all of us, we have a ton of players that we owe credit for getting us where we have been in the last couple of years. It's not just Tom, but Tom's brought the best out of everybody.
So Blaine Gabbert's a free agent at the moment. Kyle Trask, you guys selected in the third round. For the viewers at home and maybe Bucks fans, like, what did you guys see from Kyle Trask? Because maybe he isn't the starter, but at least we know he's on the roster right now. What are we getting from him after 1 year of learning from Brady, the greatest of all time?
Well, Kyle was a really productive, prolific SEC quarterback. We took him last year in the second round. We felt like we got great value with him. We love everything that we've seen from him this year. He's soaked it in behind Tom, behind Blaine, behind Ryan Griffin, some veterans, really smart veteran quarterbacks. And then to see what it takes to reach a high level with Tom has been, you know, it's just invaluable. He's got a good arm. He's very smart. He works very hard. So I'm very excited to see what he can do for us this offseason.
Yeah, it's an opportunity for him, and we'll see what you guys do. If there's a free agent you bring in, and we'll have to assess it after that. I find the NFC South really interesting right now because Brady leaves, and it's like, all right, it's wide open, right? And it's like, no, actually, the Buccaneers still have a lot of core players on that roster, but you do have several free agents. And as you go into this week and then free agency in a couple weeks, not that you have to list your priorities, but we know the names. We've seen them, whether it be Gronk or Godwin or so many of these other talented players. Where do you kind of set the stage here and say, hey, are we rebuilding or are we still in this thing where we can win even without Tom Brady as our quarterback?
Yeah, we still feel like we have a chance to win this year. And we're in a division where we think we can compete. We have a lot of players that are free agents, and we have a lot of priorities. It's just depends on how the puzzle fits together. We want to win this year. We want to compete this year for the title. But we also want to keep our eye on the future, too. We don't want to mortgage too much too soon. Yeah. So it's just going to depend on what the market bears. But we're going to try to bring a lot of these guys back.
This is not your first combine. You've been doing this for 20 plus years. Like, do you still get excited being here in Indy? Looking at this and saying, this is roster building time. This is where our GM really makes his bones. When you get here and you see the same hallways and the same faces, does it still give you a thrill even after the Super Bowl championship with the Bucks?
Yeah, it does. It's fun to be here. I was thinking about it on my way here today. This is my 27th year.
27. What teams were you with? It started with
Miami, Carolina, New England, Arizona, Philly, Arizona again, New England again. So, and I actually worked for the Combine for a couple years too.
Did
so
you work for the actual?
For the actual NFS Combine. So I think I've almost logged a full year in staying in hotels here. So I don't know if that makes me a full-time resident or not, but so I've spent a lot of time here. I do like it. It's a great setup here.
Yeah, and this draft class, I know you guys are drafting at the end of the first round. Not a quarterback draft, not a running back draft, but a lot of big boys, a lot of pass rushers, a lot of offensive linemen. How would you assess this draft class as a whole?
You know, there's some good skill on offense. There's some good edge players on defense. There's some good skill players on defense as well. It's I would say it's not super heavy at the top, but there's a lot of good mid-round picks, I think, that are going to be had this year.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Daniel Jeremiah does a lot of the work, and you know Daniel well, and he was saying, you know, top 20 might be up for grabs, but from 30 to 90, guys can go in any sort of order right now because there's such depth at those positions. And I think that's exciting for a GM because, you know, as much as it's about Brady and obviously Gronk, a lot of those guys were homegrown on that championship team and they're still homegrown. And it's really built here at the Combine.
Yeah, it sure is. We've had a lot of players that we've taken in those mid rounds that we, you know, got excited about pre-combine, but then post-combine, even more excited about. Ali Marpet was one of them. So being we took him in the second round, a D3 kid from Hobart. And
that one throw you off? I know he retired or announced his retirement. Did you see that coming, or was that a surprise?
Well, we had heard for a little while that he was contemplating this. So didn't come as a complete surprise on Sunday, but yeah. Just happy for him. You know, goes out on top.
Do you have your phone with you? Because I think we should FaceTime Brady and just not beg. Not plead, but you and I are pretty convincing guys. You've convinced really big name free agents to come. I have convinced Kay and Kyle to drink coffee in the morning at ungodly hours. Do you think maybe we could put them on?
We'll see what the future holds. Well, let's just say we'll leave the light on.
Is there hope? Honestly, is the light on? Is there hope?
We always leave the light on for a guy like Tom Brady.
That's it. We'll leave the light on for you. As we speak hotels here in Indianapolis, that's the perfect way to end it. I'm so happy to have you on. Jason Light, Super Bowl winning GM of not only the New England Patriots on their staff, but now a general manager of your own team with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. A new era for the Bucs right now. We're so excited to have you on here.
Appreciate it.